Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day is casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Casual Friday, July 22nd, 2011. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, Cliff Schechter, Chris Rosen, and Cenk Uygur. Ladies and gentlemen, fresh off of his departure from MSNBC, just a quick update. A series of car bombs, at least one, has gone off in Oslo, Norway. We're still looking for more information. One person is dead. The police are now confirming that this was a terrorist attack. Not clear as what the motive behind the terrorist attack is. Norway is one of those countries that are in the, I guess, the NATO forces in Afghanistan. But, NATO is there. There's a lot of countries. Don't have any more details on this. We will let you know as it happens. But now, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to bring to the show Mr. Cliff Schechter. Here's his theme song.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC. New media, public relations, and strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC.
There you go, Cliff Schechter, LibertasLLC.com. Welcome to the program, Cliff. It's Casual Friday. It's been
excellent.
In many ways, not just for me because of my hand eczema, but for all of us, it's sort of a miserable week.
It is. It starts off with, you can call me your overwhelming fucking heat correspondent right now because I am on the streets of Washington, D.C., and I can tell you, man, it's so fucking hot here. I think Andrew Breitbart is switching from powdered cocaine to crack just to stay awake. I mean, that's the kind of heat we're talking about.
It's
so hot that it's so hot that Newt Gingrich just married another wife.
Well, I mean, to be fair, he can do that just about. It seems any type of weather will push him to that. So
that's true. Now I am here. It is crazy. I'm in a hotel lobby, so I will apologize if there's any slight background noise, but.
That's the only place you can go when you're in the city. We're in any city. You got to go into a hotel lobby.
That's right. So we got that going on. The heat's terrible. I feel like it's almost metaphorical for what we've watched. And if you probably, I know you noticed me on. You and I had some back and forth on Twitter. I am quickly reaching the point of no return with our current president. And I'm trying not to, but. You know, Social Security, Medicare. I'm thinking next maybe he'll give away oxygen. I'm not really sure what there is next to trade away for no tax increases. I'm going beyond disappointed to actually rather angry at this moment. So there you go. So that's been a wonderful week for that too. And then there's News Corp, who's probably listening in on a phone call right now.
Yes, actually, the News Corp stuff was actually a little bit more heartening. But let's talk about this debt deal. Again, we're still in the same situation where there were opportunities for Obama to accept a deal that that would have essentially avoided any massive cuts to the budget, and he would have taken some political hits for raising the debt ceiling, but nobody really, I think. It's almost impossible to imagine that is a significant electoral issue. Those people.
Well, you know, everybody's just out there clamoring about, you know, I like everything he's done. He helped get me a job and keep the country safe, but he didn't raise the debt ceiling when I wanted him to. So now I'm not going to vote for him.
Right. Well, I mean, look, it's going to make a difference. It's going to take the Tea Party nut jobs from determined to vote against Obama to, determined to vote against Obama. So, I mean, you know, that's the only difference,
right,
I think, that we're going to see if he raises the debt ceiling. And frankly, he raises the debt ceiling without any cuts. It's actually going to probably hurt the Republicans. So he walked away from that. And now he's looking to cut Social Security and Medicare. This is just, you know, we're in the exact, this is the exact same conversation we had last week, but he just seems hell-bent
on it. It gets worse, though. Right. He keeps fighting for more. I mean, look, you know, I don't trust his motives anymore. You know, we've gone over I used to be a guy that just thought he was weak and incompetent. Now I'm starting to think he's stupid and incompetent. And I'm sorry if I'm using such harsh language, but that's the way I feel about him at this point. I mean, he and his political people literally must be the stupidest people in the world if they think that they can cut Social Security, cut Medicare, have a 9% unemployment rate, and he's going to get reelected. That'd be wonderful. He'll have his grand bargain he can talk about to his grandchildren about how he was the big adult in the room that stood up and cut something, reformed something that didn't need to be reformed, kind of like everything else he wants to reform. He doesn't want to reform defense spending, by the way, which, you know, maybe could use a little bit of it. But how he did that and how he was a one-term president.
Because, wait a second. Now, this is interesting because I'm not sure if he is politically, well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know that if he cuts Medicare and Social Security that that's going to really hurt his chances significantly, because I just don't think that there is enough of an awareness of what's happening. Now, I guess it's possible you could see Mitt Romney attack him for it, or Michelle Bachmann attack him for it. I think what it really does is it makes it guaranteed that the Democrats will be in minorities in both the Senate and the House. That's a guarantee.
I mean, it guarantees that. But, I mean, here's my feeling on what it does. I think you're mostly right. I mean, believe me, I never underestimate the low-information voter out there. But the group of people, you know, I remember learning something. I worked on my first campaign for a Democratic congressman back in 1992, and when I was in college. And I remember this great old political guy that had been on all these races for years in Philadelphia, in the back rooms and the whatever, the lesson he taught me. And I can say this because at least I belong to one of these groups, as to you. And he's like, don't ever piss off the old people or the Jews. They all fucking vote. And I'm just saying.
Someone on Twitter actually referred to me as an old Jew.
Well, you know, it depends. I mean, what are you, 43? I guess is that really old these days?
Whammy.
I hope not. All I got to say is really we're in a situation where I mostly would agree with you. If he was like raising the beer tax or something, I really wouldn't count on fraternities to organize against him and actually come out and vote. But when it comes to the elderly, they vote. And they tend to pay more attention because, well, they have the time to. And, I mean, already a lot of elderly who tend to be a little more socially conservative are pissed at him on certain social issues, even though, ironically, he really hasn't done that much. But the Republicans, of course, have painted him. I just think, look, I heard he saw the first attack go out, the attack email go out, hitting Obama. I think it was a red state, some right-wing group or blog or whatever, for cutting people's Social Security. They're going to jump on this, and they're going to, and Romney, if he's a nominee or whoever, is going to, he's going to fit this into their whole economic message against him on jobs and everything else. He didn't give anybody jobs. He hurt the economy. He spent all this money, and look, he still even cut your Medicare and Social Security. I mean, I hope you're right, Sam. I really do.
This is not an aspirational analysis on my part. I think that I don't think it helps him. I just don't know if it would hurt him. It would hurt him with me. It would hurt him with me. My assumption is that their calculus is that somehow this is going to help them at the polls, but they're definitely. The calculus involves doing this by trampling over Democrats in the House and the Senate. Now, there are reports that Harry Reid And, you know, these days I read this stuff and I'm just like, I don't even know if I believe it. But supposedly Harry Reid and a lot of the Senate Democrats are extremely pissed because they've been completely shut out of the negotiations between Bonaire and Obama. And supposedly Harry Reid said something like, good luck to them. You know, like he's basically saying they're on their own and we're going to go. This is where we go our separate ways. Now, I don't know if I really believe that.
What I can say. Because, you know, you said we've heard all that talk in the past. You know, that letter that was signed that they wouldn't vote for a health care bill without a progressive, without a public option. So I'm a little tired of hearing the Obama can't push us around this time. I will believe it if I see it, and I'll be very proud of Harry Reid and anybody else who says, no, this is not going to happen. We're going to take Mitch McConnell's deal. And it's ridiculous because they cannot be charged with, at that point, with blowing up the debt ceiling and causing all sorts of issues with the economy and world economy because Obama was offered a clean vote. All right? So the people that at that point to blame, quite frankly, are the Tea Party guys and Barack Obama.
Right.
All right? And I mean, as much as it pains me to say this, man, and you and I have had this conversation every week, I mean, you know, I wanted to be an Obama fan, but I mean... You know, he just, the behavior is despicable, and it's immoral, frankly.
It's immoral
to raise what did he raise the defense budget by, $18 billion or something? It's immoral to offer the biggest defense budget ever, have us involved in three wars, one in Libya, that frankly, what are the priorities here? So is it more important? I mean, I feel terrible about any people being slaughtered and hurt, although we don't even know whose side we're on in Libya because there are a number of al-Qaeda guys fighting against Gaddafi, but let's throw that aside for a second. Do I want people to be massacred? No. But should that be our first concern, or should the people, the elderly Americans who gave their, you know, who worked hard, played by the rules, did what they were supposed to do in this country, and now will literally be eating cat food, should that be our first concern?
Right. Well, I mean, fundamentally, the real question is when people say we can't afford it, I mean, really? I mean, how can you say that when you're talking about cutting? What was on the table in terms of Bonaire at this point, it supposedly raised revenues. But in fact, if you calculate the fact that the Bush tax cuts are set to expire if nothing is done, if not a single vote is cast, they will expire. This actually reduces taxes by like 25%.
You mean the deficit?
No. This actually, the deal that they're talking about supposedly raises $1 trillion in new revenues. But that is basically including what will happen anyways, the expiration
right,
of
they're lying. I mean, they're using sleight of hand.
It's
exactly.
Actually a tax cut involved in this
crazy
package.
Idea. Right, I have this crazy idea, and I know we've talked about it before, so sorry to talk about it ad nauseum. How about they let those tax cuts expire? How about they cut Monsanto's farm subsidies? How about they cut Exxon's oil subsidies? How about they pull us the fuck out of one or two of these wars that we're in right now? Maybe even three. Go for it all. Go crazy. Bluff, as he said to Eric Cantor, which, by the way, is a pretty terrible strategy when you tell somebody you're bluffing. But
don't call
and
my
you know
bluff.
Better than me,
wait,
Sam.
What?
I've seen you at the tables. You know better than me. But okay, throw that aside. I mean, come on. Like, what do we mean? This whole fake word in crisis. But I mean, there's so many things that can be cut that we're wasting money on. They know it. They just don't want to. I mean, it sickens me at this point.
Yeah. Well, Cliff, I know you're headed to a meeting now down in D.C. So I will let you go. But briefly, I got Cenk on later in the program. Just give me your reaction.
Well, you know, in a week of all sorts of crap, I mean, all I could do is say how, I mean, I've known Cenk for a long time. He's a friend. I used to go on the Young Turks and do a regular segment, and I had a lot of respect for him then. Wow, can I only say how much my respect has gone through the roof for him. I mean, he's got a young child, you know, and a young daughter. You know, he's got some decisions he's got to make financially. It sounds like they threw a lot of money at him. And he did this crazy thing that it seems that people in Washington I shouldn't say everybody, but let's just say the entire Republican Party, the executive office here, and many members of Congress on the Democratic side don't seem to be able to do, which is stand up for principle and not give in to the guy with the biggest paycheck. So please, you know, I'll communicate with Cenk privately and whatever, but give him a big congratulations. How proud I am of him. Not that what I think necessarily matters, because. You know, it's that kind of stuff that can inspire people to do the right thing. I mean, what a joke. I've known about some of the corporate media stuff that's going on. Hell, I got banned from MSNBC for 2 to 3 years because apparently in 2007 sometime I said some over-the-top mean stuff to a Republican who they liked. So I know this stuff still goes on over there. And you know, good for Cenk. Good for Cenk, you know.
Cliff Schechter, thanks so much for joining us as always. Next week we'll do it full. We'll get a full Schechter segment in there. In fact, I got an email from somebody who had said, you got to have Cliff Schechter on for longer.
I apologize. If you want to next week to make up for this, I'm not putting you in a bad position here, Sam, because you can always say, that Schechter guy, he's completely insane, as some people think I am, and don't want, and you don't have to do it. But if you want me on, I will add 15 minutes to a half hour. I will go on for 45 minutes or an hour next week. I will leave that to you.
Well, maybe we'll do that. Maybe we'll maybe we'll have Chris Rosen up front or something. We'll figure out some way of doing that.
You figure it out. Give me a little more time to be funny too, and not to just sit here and lose my temper.
I know. Well, you know, it's this heat. It's the heat and the humidity combined with the debt deal. I think that has driven everybody sort of just half insane. You're full insane, but most people half insane.
I agree. It's getting me to act like that Jack Nicholson character from A Few Good Men, where he's like, the heat's fucking killing me, and then starts ripping into everybody. That's kind of where I am.
Cliff Schechter, thanks for joining us.
Thanks a lot, buddy. I appreciate it, Sam. Have a great week.
Thank you.
Bye.
All right, folks, we'll be back in just a moment with Chris Rosen, and then, of course, we will be talking to Cenk Uygur of the Young Turks.
Christopher Rosen of MovieLine.com. Big shot senior editor, eh? Here is your theme song. You sit in a dimly lit room watching movies and you dress like a slob. Jimmy Reefer Cakes got to ask. He said, man, how'd you get that job? I said, how did you get that job?
You know, someday, Chris, you've got to actually tell us how did you get that job. I mean, specifically. I mean, I'm not asking rhetorically. I'm actually saying, like, how did you get that job? Like,
I'm very qualified.
Is your uncle, like, does your uncle own that?
No,
MovieLine.com?
I'm a talented writer.
Is your last name, is your middle name MovieLine.com? Is that what it is? I don't want you to tell us today because I want there.
I'm just telling you, I'm very talented.
I want there
why.
To be a reason to bring you back. As we have that story in the future. What are you doing? You're just sitting in your. I see you're sitting on your couch. What's that picture behind you that I see?
It's a painting my friend did of Martin Scorsese.
You have a painting of Martin Scorsese hanging on your wall?
Yeah, I do.
You seem a little embarrassed. Why don't you show it to me?
No, I'm not. I'm not going to show it to you.
Look how are you turning red. I've never seen you like this before.
You know, it is what it is. It's a nice painting.
Is it a nude? Is it like a Martin
Scorsese?
No, it's
not a fucking
nude.
What's the matter with you?
Couch?
Jesus Christ.
Well, let me see it. Let's lift the computer up.
Can you see it?
Oh, my God. That is embarrassing.
Painting.
That is definitely embarrassing.
It's a great painting, though.
It's weird.
Nice.
It's weird that you have
well
like
done.
Such a sort of like a it's
but if it was up to you, you'd say, oh, you don't know who Martin Scorsese is. You're such an idiot. Blah, 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 blah.
Did you get the painting before or after you saw your first Martin Scorsese movie?
Oh, come on. I'm not even going to dignify that with a response.
What's that other painting to the right there? What is there another one there? What
no.
is it?
No. That's it.
That is weird. It's a weird painting.
It's a Terrence Malick painting. It's Terrence Malick feeding John Cassavetes grapes.
They're very different type of filmmakers. You know, you wouldn't understand
that. Oh, yeah. But, well, you know, I obviously I'm so simple-minded. I can't figure that out. But
now, last week, what did you suggest to me? Now, people should remember.
I suggested
remember.
Great
now,
movies
hold on,
last
hold
week.
On for a second.
Oh, okay, okay.
I'm just on. Teeing this
Everybody
up.
Everybody chill out.
We don't have too much time. We had Cenk Uygur on, a guy with some integrity. We'll be
That's a pretty big get for you, Sam.
Not,
I'm assuming
not,
you booked that and not one
no,
of your producers.
I can get that. I can get that.
Oh, okay.
Now this now what happens is Chris Rosen suggests a Netflix streaming movie, and it should be an Amazon on demand movie for me because I can watch both of them on my Roku. And
do you get paid by Roku?
Do I? Dude, I got news for you. I don't get paid by anybody. I don't get paid by anybody. I get these phone calls for like from you know CNBC and MSNBC, like, hey, can you come over? Like, you know, like, you don't pay me anything. Like, you make it like I'm supposed to be on call 24 hours. I'm not a paramedic, for God's sakes. Paramedics get paid. Anyways, so.
You know, David Lee Roth used to be a paramedic.
That's great. So,
It's Name Drop Friday. I just happen to know him. That's why
what,
I said
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Oh, Johnny Galecki was in town. I didn't get a chance to see him. Name Drop Friday.
Nice.
Oh, but I did shit on Governor George Pataki on Monday.
Name Drop Friday.
He will not be hanging out with me. So, Chris, what did you suggest last week for me to watch?
I suggested 4 months, 3 weeks, and 2 days, and I forget the other one. But I know that one got got a lot of nice play on Twitter.
4 months, 3 weeks, 2 days. I didn't see that one.
No, well,
but
that's
I
your
did.
Loss.
Yeah, I did notice that Sydney Moon. I mean, she's not part officially a part of the organization, but she is the only softcore porn. I don't know if softcore or hardcore. I think it's soft. It's somewhere middlecore porn online that we actually not officially endorse, but it is approved. But she had mentioned she was watching that. Now, the other one was, what was the name of it? Source Code.
Oh, Source Code's great. Yeah,
I watched
watch
Source
that?
Code.
Wasn't it fun?
I was able to convince Nikki. You know, it was okay.
It's a fun movie. I mean, it's a whole lot of shit, but I thought it was fun.
It wasn't, you know, it was like, you know, sort of like the loop never closed. It, you know, it was never quite, it didn't quite make sense.
I like how the ending is kind of dark, because if you think about it, well, you don't have to spoil it for everybody who hasn't seen
it. I don't mind spoiling it for everybody.
At the end of the movie, he takes that guy's life, basically, to live on in the alternate reality that's splintered off. And I think that's pretty cool, because it's kind of like dark.
That's not quite true. I don't.
Yes,
think
it is.
No, forget it.
It is.
You got it wrong. Well, it's not a spoiler.
I didn't get it wrong.
Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert.
I had to take my headphones off.
Spoiler alert.
This movie's on the queue for me. I'm going to watch this one next.
Okay.
He takes that guy's...
Nah, dude, come on. Enough.
You told me to spoil it.
No.
Anyway.
Jesus. I'm going to go on MovieLine.com and I'm going to put in the comments. I'm going to spoil everything. I know that.
And Luke and Darth Vader are father and son.
Okay, now. So, what?
Nothing. I'm just throwing out spoilers.
I was just about to get there. So, okay. So what do you got for me this week? Do you know what they did? Somebody told me, like, well, I've been watching Games of Thrones.
How is that show? It's on my list.
It's good. You know, the problem is, like, I see it in a bunch of different formats. Because I accidentally, on occasion, download them.
Ah.
And
that's not allowed.
Sometimes they're in like QuickTime. Sometimes they're like an inch by 3 inches. I don't know. So it's good. It's a good show. All right. So what do you got for me this week?
Well, I'll start with the Amazon one. Another small indie. It came out earlier this year. It's called Happy Thank You More Please.
Happy Thank You More Please.
It's that from it's from the guy. Josh Radner, who is on How I Met Your Mother. He wrote and directed it. It's got Malin Ackerman and Tony Hale.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Seriously?
What? Have you seen it?
Are you gonna recommend to me a so-called independent movie by a fucking sitcom
writer?
I mean,
it's not Who's the Caboose, but I mean, it's pretty good.
I'm sure it did much better than Who's the Caboose. I'm sure, not much. Did you review Happy Thank You More on MovieLine.com?
No.
Was it reviewed on your site?
Yeah, of course it was. We have a movie critic. She reviews things.
You douchebag. You horrible douchebag.
I don't review movies.
But you're an editor. Can't you assign it to somebody?
The week that your movie came out, frankly, we had a little difficulty because our DVD editor was, left. So kind of got lost in the shuffle, Sam.
Well, it's still available. It just came out a month ago. Do it again.
We like keeping things timely.
You're a douchebag. Happy Thank You More. Never. Never. I'm writing it down and I'm putting an X next to it. Do not watch.
For people who like movies, you might like it. It's a nice movie. It's a nice little indie.
I can just imagine how annoying it is. Is there a precocious kid in it?
Yeah, it's a black kid.
Yeah, okay. There you go. There's a precocious kid in what? Is it a divorced parents?
No, he's not divorced. I mean, he's just like a burnout.
He's a burnout. Oh, and he's back. Whose life does he go back into?
Nobody's. He tries to help the kid and stuff.
I've never seen that. That's such a unique concept for a film. A burnout guy
meets
a precocious kid and helps him.
As we've said, they're mostly...
Oh, God, we needed another one of those.
As we've said, most movies, there's like 7 different plots, and that's about it.
That's not even a plot. That's just like the classic...
It is.
Jesus, there's a program that like literally you can plug that into. Like, what does he do? Is he sitting like... And then the kid, you know what happens?
He's a writer.
Of course he is. And he's got writer's block. And the kid comes in and actually gets him to write for the first time. But meanwhile, the crusty old man, he helps the kid out with some personal problem. Maybe it's his mom. Maybe
not that old.
His dad's not around or he's having problems at school. And the crusty old writer helps him out, right?
Not
Isn't that
old.
It? Right?
Pretty much. Yeah. Some of it. It's a good movie. I think you'd like it.
What's the other one you got?
I got two, actually. They're on Netflix Instant Watch. You could do either because it's so fucking hot. I thought of Do the Right Thing and The Paper. Two movies I absolutely love, New York-based, that are very good for this kind of heat.
Do the Right Thing.
Obviously you've seen Do the Right Thing.
What is The Paper?
The Paper is Ron Howard directed it. It's Michael Keaton. It's like a one crazy day. He writes for a newspaper, Michael Keaton, that's supposed to be like, The Post or whatever. And it just is like his life in it, like what happens. It's actually a great movie. It's so entertaining. It's super fun. And the cast is great because it's got Michael Keaton when Michael Keaton was still doing movies and great. Marissa Tomei is his wife. Randy Quaid, fucking bananas.
I've done a scene with Marissa Tomei.
Oh, yeah? I interviewed her this week. So
did you mention my name?
No. Please.
When you say you interviewed Marissa Tomei, were you at a press conference and she was at a podium? And he's like,
"Hi,
question from the MovieLine.com. Hi, Chris Rosen from MovieLine.com.
I actually got to go interview her face to face in a hotel room.
I just first want to start off by telling you that I have a painting of Martin Scorsese.
You're not listening to me, but I did get to interview face to face. It was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good one. She's very nice.
Yeah, well, she was to me.
What scene did you do with her?
In Happy Accidents, a genuine independent film, not one by a sitcom writer coming up with the most hackneyed, lame...
Weren't you trying to write a sitcom?
No, I've written many sitcoms.
Oh. So if you made a movie, you would be
Well, excuse me. Yes, but here's the difference, though. When I made a movie, you didn't review it on your crappy site.
I recommended it. We talked about it 2 weeks in a row. It was a fun
We talked
movie.
About it on my show!
Right. Well, where else are we going to talk about it?
Wow, you really were able to convince people
it
to buy that
thing. It was a fun movie.
Jesus.
I liked it. It was fine. You didn't get a great performance out of Sarah, but that's okay. She was
Are
new.
You kidding me? That was her best performance ever. Are you serious?
No, I'm not. I wanted to see what you said.
Jesus.
You, on the other hand, Lee Strasberg called. He wants his acting lessons back. Somebody laughed at that.
You executed that joke incorrectly.
I'm laughing at Sam's face.
You executed that joke incorrectly.
I did.
You don't say one of the top acting coaches in the country wants his acting lessons back because that implies that I have absorbed that. You don't even know how to structure a joke.
I do know how to structure a joke. It implies
you know what you're saying?
Keanu
Reeves called and said he wanted all his acting talent back. That's the joke.
No, that's not really the joke.
Goodbye, Chris Rosen. I have to talk to a guest with some integrity.
Sam, it's been fun. Do the right thing, the paper, and happy thank you.
You do the right thing. Tell your DVD editor to review Caboose.
And everyone, and if you're really hot this weekend, you could sit and watch Who's the Caboose?
God. That guy infuriates me to no end. All right, folks, when we come back, we'll be talking to Cenk Uygur of the Young Turks, formerly of MSNBC.
Let's drill, baby, drill, not stall, baby, stall.
That woman is an idiot.
Here it is, the Republicans' health care plan for America. Don't get sick.
If you think that's a fair ad, okay, then you're a Republican and an asshole. Have at it, Hoss. Be in that party. Despicable, man.
They're the bad guys.
Endless taxpayer bailout.
Yeah, that's not true.
When Obama won, the reason why we worked so hard for him,
we didn't want a garden variety politician.
Taking a stand, not just cutting deals.
That's what vision is. That's what vision is.
The Best of the Left podcast. The best of the truly liberal media. Edited, organized, and mixed. Only at bestoftheleft.com.
We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome to this program Cenk Uygur of the Young Turks. I'm sure you're all familiar. Cenk, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Sam. I appreciate you having me on.
What did you get, 150,000 hits so far on the video about your announcement of leaving MSNBC?
Something along those lines. There was a couple of different videos. There was like part one, part two. When you add all those up, somewhere between 200 and 250,000.
Yeah, and that's just in what 24 hours. I mean, we'll see where that ends up. But all right, I got a lot of questions for you. Appreciate your coming on. Cliff Schechter sends his regards and his admiration for you. I got some questions that we got on Twitter a lot that I want to ask you, but let me just start with the one that I'm trying to ask. Now, I assume everybody, I talked about this on the program yesterday. I assume everybody knows the story. You had been hosting MSNBC Live for 6 months or so after being a sort of a rover contributor there. And they basically called you into the executive offices, said, we want you to go back to a roving thing. There's been reports. Were you offered a weekend show?
Yes.
Okay. And so you were offered a weekend show as well, and they were going to give you even more money than you're making now. And you said, no. Just quickly, just reiterate for us why you said no.
Well, you know, we had this conversation about 3 months ago with the head of MSNBC where I was told that, you know, MSNBC's establishment and we, you know, we'd like to be outsiders, but we're insiders and people in Washington are not happy with your tone. You know, there's been a lot of back and forth in the press about whether I had a fair interpretation of that. The official MSNBC line is that they were referring to a conversation Phil Griffin was with a broker of mine and how they had problems with my body language. It's a curious way to state that you shouldn't move your arms as much to give this whole long spiel on insiders, outsiders, the establishment, and people in Washington. So you interpret that as you will. And I had very good ratings, beat MSNBC from last year, which is definitely something they consider very much, and that was Ed Schultz's program that they were so impressed with that they promoted him and beat CNN rather handily. And so when there was no real reason given for
do you
the
and
move,
Ed Schultz really have that difference of body of body gestures or whatever? I mean, honestly,
I mean, I can't see it, but you know, I don't know. It's
I mean, I think listen. The bottom line is, I mean, I think, and it's clear that, you know, you came from an outsider, and even more outsider than even radio, but you know, dispositionally, you're outsider. I mean, I you know, we've talked about this over the years because we've had many conversations both on and off air, your political leanings, this is the most interesting aspect of this to me. Your political leanings are not particularly, I would not classify you as any more to the left than other people on that network. In fact, I would say that there are people who are probably, in some respects, more liberal than you. Wouldn't you agree with that? More or less?
Yeah, but I definitely would, Sam, but there's a really important distinction, right? Which is that how do you, not how liberal are you, but how do you handle the Democratic Party, right? So, you know, in this political climate, you know I'm considered very progressive, right?
Right.
And I don't think the president is progressive at all.
Right.
So I have no problem pointing that out. If someone is more liberal or more progressive than I am, but does not point that out as much, well, that's a different story.
Right. I mean, the key here is,
like, beating up
are you an insider or an outsider? Are you part of the establishment or are you not? And I think in this instance, you know, when you attack the establishment, there are plenty of people who self-identify as being very liberal, but they are so attached to the establishment that they will not criticize because they want access. And, as I say those words, there are certain contributors on that network that come to mind. And, you know, I've mentioned them in the past. I don't need to mention them again. Let me ask you this. Do you feel like you have completely shut the door? Do you think you have access to get on MSNBC again? Because I think one of the things that, well, I'm curious as to whether or not you felt that when you made that video.
I'd be surprised if I was back on MSNBC. Very surprised.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think that, you know, that's the thing that I think I respect the most about what you did, is that it showed a tremendous amount of integrity to your audience, to yourself, and it took a tremendous amount of balls, two really big ones. I don't want to break any news here that you have multiple cojones, but it was very impressive. I mean, just very impressive, and I'm not alone. I think that sentiment is out there, and you showed a lot of integrity. Go ahead.
Thanks for saying that, Sam. I really do appreciate it. I appreciate people saying that. And look, people have to realize why it's hard to resist the temptation and the lure of that establishment, because where else are you going to go? You're certainly not going to go to Fox News, right? And it's not like CNN is putting out any progressive programming. So your options become smaller and smaller, and I think that really affects a lot of people. You know, and I think that they think, well, what are we going to do? And so, don't get me wrong, I'm in a unique position because I've got the Young Turks. So I do have somewhere else to go. So that allowed me to be able to do that easier, right? So take away some credit from me in that sense. But other people don't have other places to go, right? So, God, that institutional pressure is enormous.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this, I think we had dinner, I don't remember when it was exactly, but that was one of the things I think that you were always aware of, is that you had the Young Turks in your back pocket, and that was, in many ways, I think that, you know, going into that situation, knowing that you had the Young Turks there, you could also, you could afford, in some respects, to be bold, but, you know, with that said, I know that you have a new child, or a young child, I should say, and it's impressive any way you slice it. But let me go to some Twitter questions. Cenk, do you think 100% unbiased political free speech has become incompatible with corporate-owned and sponsored TV news media?
I honestly think it's a little bit more nuanced than that, right? Because I think Rachel, for example, does a great show. I think Dylan Radigan is unbelievable. He's really nonpartisan, and he definitely takes it to the establishment. But, you know, he's on a razor's edge. And the reason I say it's more nuanced is that Rachel, through very patient and smart, skills there, wound up having larger and larger ratings and hence more and more power and and now she's achieved a great deal of independence. So, you know, it's possible, but it's really, really hard. And my main point, I think, is that it is not because of management that she has that independence and that progressive show, but in spite of management that she has.
Right.
And so, by the way, and if you're a person who's coming in fresh and management has not already given you a contract and hence, you know, tied their own career to you in some to some degree, it's much harder, right? Or it's easier for them to act against you, harder for them to act against someone who they've given multiple contracts to. So there's all, there's, you've got to keep it real, that there's all that political stuff in the background.
That was from Don't Be a Putz. Amy Sue Farmer on Twitter, any chance Cenk will get his own show on Current TV? I did notice last night when you were on Olbermann, he said something to the effect of, like, we'll be in touch soon.
Yeah, you know, everybody's talking about that. We'll see. We'll see. I have no idea. But we're not in talks yet, so there's nothing imminently brewing. Let's put it that way.
Mr. White Treecom, where to now? well, I don't know what that, where to now, fearless leaders.
Well, you know, actually, Sam, I want to address that because, look, a lot of people think you lost your job and you're like, I'm unemployed or something. No, no, my main job has always been the Young Turks. Even when I was on MSNBC, even when I was doing 6 o'clock every single day, I consider that my side job. My main job is the Young Turks. They have over 1 million views a day. That's larger than any MSNBC show. So where to now is back to my regular job, which I've been doing all along anyway. So, and by the way, we might have exciting news about that in a couple of weeks, too. So we'll see how that develops.
But break it here.
Yeah, I'd love to, but we don't have it yet. So.
Let's see. Oh, CPBKNY. How about why does Radigan kiss Coburn's ass? I don't know if I agree with that, but go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. Look, I really, really respect Dylan. And I think what he sees in Coburn is a guy who's willing to buck his own party, and he really gets jazzed up about that, right? And he's right. Look, Coburn is maddening. There's no question that, you know, he will turn around and be, you know, join the party line 9 out of 10 times. He's massively conservative, etc. But at the same time, to be fair, you know, he's also the guy who demanded that they include tax increases in the overall bargain, right? Now, his own plan cuts $9 trillion. It's a disaster, right? But there is something about Coburn that is anti-establishment. I think that's what appeals to Raffi.
Yeah, I mean, he is bucking. He is basically saying F you to Grover Norquist, and there's certainly been no other Republican who's been willing to do that.
Right, and that takes some courage, and that takes some degree of saying, hey, you know what, I don't care what my contributors say, who are all, of course, exclusively rich, either people or corporations who say, look, you will cut our taxes under any and all circumstances. So anyone who even takes a little bite out of that, in this current context, deserves some degree of credit, given that Coburn is massively conservative and we disagree with him, but still he should get some degree of credit for that.
Joni Gentian says, what happened to the other two on the Young Turks? I guess Jill and Ben, maybe? Who are they talking about? That was a long time ago.
Yeah, yeah. No, but, you know, look, that's the thing. From our perspective, we know everything that's going on, but from the perspective of the audience, they either listen to us on Sirius Satellite Radio or Air America, or they're, you know, just started watching online. So they all know a bunch of different Young Turks because we've been doing the show for 9 years. So in the beginning, it was me, Ben, and Jill. Ben Mankiewicz is host of Turner Classic Movies on the weekends. He was briefly host of At the Movies, replacing Roger Ebert. And right now, he is the host of many of our TYT Network shows, like What the Flick, which is a movie review show on YouTube, TYT Sports, and actually he's doing the Young Turks with me today. Jill Pike is communications director for Third Way.
Third Way? So, what?
I know. I still love her, but I'm not sure, you know, not sure that's an organization I agree with. But
talk about the prodigal daughter. Jeez. Wow. All right, here's, I mean, I want you to address this. Anger Farm, consider me part of the jank backlash. If he had played by the rules, we'd been spared the awful Sharpton. Put aside the awful Sharpton thing. I've never, to be honest with you, I've never even seen him host a show. But what do you say to people who say, Cenk, you know, if you were willing to play by the rules, if you were to, you know, make some non-material changes as to what you were doing in tone and this and that, or even if you went, you know, to the weekend show, you'd still be allowing for access to people on your shows. I mean, you had people on those shows that, frankly, I don't know that any other hosts will have on MSNBC. What do you say to that?
Well, that's, I actually think that's a great question, and that's a multiple-part answer. First, on the Sharpton issue, you know, in the press they've been talking about, oh, Sharpton got better ratings or something. But first, I don't know where they got that from. Second of all, the decision was made in the beginning, I'm sorry, at the end of June. Sharpton had not filled in for me almost at all. He'd filled in one day when I was sick. All the stuff that he did fill in is irrelevant. They'd already made the decision. So that was not the factor at all. Second of all, the way he framed that question, it seems like I turned down 6 o'clock. No, Sharpton is going to be part of 6 o'clock, it appears, no matter what I did. So that wasn't the question at all. So don't blame me. But I have no view on Sharpton. I don't think that, you know, I don't think that's pertinent to what happened with me, right?
Right. Well,
now,
aside the Sharpton thing.
Right. Yeah, as to the question of, like, putting on progressive guests, which I love doing, and it's funny because a lot of times people will be like, who's that? Like, I brought on Baratunde Thurston,
uh-huh.
And they're like, Bara who? And Baratunde's, you know, great blogger, great comedian, editor of The Onion, obviously editor also of Jack and Jill Politics. And so I was very proud to bring on a voice like that and you and Sirota on a regular basis, and just it goes on and on, right? But the critical reason that I took that into account. The critical reason I couldn't do it is because if I took the weekend job and, you know, and the contributor thing and kept on going, I felt that I couldn't tell the story, and I thought that this was a really important story to tell, right? Because, again, not a lot of people are in a position to be able to tell this story. One, they weren't on the inside. Two, if they are on the inside, they don't have a lot of choices to where to go, right? And this is a critical, critical problem in our media, which is that we, like, it's, I don't want to be over dramatic, but it's almost pointless to, if you're not challenging the government, if you're just accepting what they say and regurgitating it in one way or another. And I'm not saying, you know, that that's all they do at MSNBC, but if they are concerned about that and decisions based on that, and by the way, it's not exclusive to MSNBC, I would be shocked if you didn't have the same ramifications on CNN, right? Then what's the point of the press? What are you doing? Oh, you're delivering me the point of view of the Republicans and the Democrats. Who cares?
And so, I mean, do you think that the existence of current, not from a personal perspective, but in terms of that it allowed some air to be some oxygen to criticize MSNBC. I mean, I was in a not terribly dissimilar situation at Air America, and Mark Green came to me and he said, "You're really going to enjoy the person who's going to replace you from 9 to noon. It's Lionel." And I was like, are you aware that Lionel's not even a liberal? And he says, well, you know, we're still a 70% liberal network. And, you know, your doing this has made me sort of look back on that time and wonder if I should have actually gone quietly to the weekends at Air America and made a stink. But, you know, part of it was that we were the only game in town at that time, and I didn't want to be part of slagging it. Because I thought it could still come back in some ways. I mean, do you think that the existence of current, never mind the fact that it may or may not offer any opportunities to you, you know, like you say, the Young Turks is a massive platform in and of itself. But the idea that they're not necessarily the only game in town allowed for the space for this type of criticism?
I think as a general principle, it definitely does. I think it's a great development because, first of all, the more progressive stations you have on, of course, the better, because it allows for more progressive hosts and points of view, et cetera. But second of all, it creates a competition to kind of out-progressive one another, which is a fantastic competition. That's mm-hmm. exactly the kind of competition we want. And look, I think oftentimes the management of MSNBC either makes this mistake or they're doing it on purpose. They confuse Democrats with progressives. They figure, well, if we're a pro-Democrat, that covers it. Right? But as you see in the current environment, that definitely does not cover it. I mean, the so-called Democratic president is talking about slashing Social Security and Medicare when the Republicans didn't even initially ask him to. It's unbelievable. And if you think you're supporting progressives by supporting President Obama because he calls himself a Democrat, I think that's a joke. And so if there's someone to the left saying, hey, wait a minute, those positions are not progressive, I think that helps everybody.
Yeah, I think there's an analogy here between that concept of veal pen that some people have charged that liberal or progressive organizations allow themselves to sort of like be put in a box so that they maintain a seat at the table. It is a similar charge to what you're charging here, is that they're willing to sell off access, because I don't think that anybody in MSNBC has a problem with specific political positions as much as they do with sort of maintaining certain relationships.
I my sense of it is that's exactly right. Right. I don't think that anybody cares what is your position on Medicaid. Right. But I think they care a lot as to whether the White House or the Democratic Party is going to continue to come on their air, continue to give them scoops, continue to work with them, especially as we head into an election. Rightly or wrongly, I think that they view that access as incredibly important and critical to what they think they have to do. I don't think it's critical at all, but obviously we disagree on that count. And I think, but once you're hooked on that access, you're done for. Because then you lose your ability to critique that side effectively and honestly. And that's a terrible spot to be in, and certainly a spot I didn't want to be in.
Well, in these type of situations, I always quote Lexi Sales from a heyday back in British comedy. He said, you know, what really sucks is when all your friends become friends with Phil Collins, you can't talk about how shitty his music is anymore. And you can disagree on Phil Collins. I don't. But that it seems like a similar dynamic. Cenk, thanks so much for joining us. I appreciate it. I know you're pretty busy these days.
Thank you for having me, Sam. Always great to talk to you.
All right, we'll be in touch. There you go. Maybe he'll be part of the Majority Report. All right, see you, Cenk. All right, folks, that is our program for today. You can join me in the post show at majority.fm. No, not majority.fm. That's our website, majority.fm. It's literally 120 degrees in this room right now, and I am about to faint. So forgive me. I am at majority.fm. You can call me at 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920. I'm going to say that one more time. 646-257-3920. Folks, a lot of people are becoming members of the Young Turks now because of this. And that means that a lot of people are not becoming members of the Majority Report. Now, I certainly wish Cenk well and hope he gets a lot of members, but we need members. You know, Dave Kohler, Cenk's executive producer, walked into our office and just looked around. You don't have to look around. You can actually not move your head.
Just look straight forward.
You can look straight forward. You can see the entire office. And he goes, huh, efficient. We need your support, folks. And most of all, the way you can support the show is by becoming a member for 50 cents a day. You keep the show on air. You get an extra hour or 40 minutes or 50 minutes of material. And you can also support us by buying your junk through our Amazon link and buying justcoffee.coop, coupon code majority. But a membership is the thing that's going to keep the show alive. And it's highly unlikely that I'm going to be hired by anybody.
At the very least, tell your friends about the show. At the very least.
That's at the very least. But only if they're going to become members. We're not just only. See you on the flip side, folks. Have a great weekend. All right, ladies and gentlemen, and as an added bonus to the end of the podcast today, we have, of course, our two great songs, our news and review for the week. Both of these seem to be news and reviewy. The first one is, of course, from Jimmy Reefer Cake at allthehypocrisy.blogspot.com. It's called Police State. Let's hear that now.
Here's the one. It's a police state, you gotta do what you're told, unless you've got the money, because justice is sold. You whistleblowers better not ignore the fate of Bradley Manning and Sean Hoare. Bradley Manning still hasn't seen his day in court. Some say he's being tortured in an army fort. Sean Hoare told the BBC about hacking phones, and he died in his apartment all alone. And he was about to be vindicated, man. He died the day before Rupert Murdoch and his dink little son had to testify in front of Parliament. Scotland Yard says it isn't suspicious, 'cause they're afraid of rich men who are so litigious. While the police are bought and the media is sold, you can be sure they decide how this story is told. Police state! Police state! Police state!
There it is, ladies and gentlemen. Police State by Jimmy Reefer Cake. I like the lyrics. I like that chorus. You know, it was pretty good. It was a pretty good showing from Jimmy Reefer Cake this week. And now up, of course, it's the Screaming Majority. Pray for us, Perry. Yes, indeed.
In the depths of the Great Recession, nothing succeeds like secession. Governor Perry's a great success. Never mind that his budget's a mess. Oh, pray for us, Perry. Perry, pray for us. Keep us safe from everyone in Jose and convert the gay for us. So Perry's getting holy, 'cause his revenue's full of holes. Starting up a great revival as Texas turns into a dust bowl. Pray for us, Perry. As Trump's dragged on, good hair had a brainstorm. They'd all pray for the rainstorm. Results were quite hysterical. One more fair Texas miracle. Pray for Perry. Lord, hear Perry's prayer. Save his dried up farmland and protect his perfect hair. Still a word on garden butchers, whatever the fact is. Nothing's certain, no, nothing is certain, no. And Texas, pray for us, Perry. Get us right with God. Right on with religion, but this governing's hard.
There it is. Pray for us, Perry. Quite a spiritual. I love it.
I love how they have a different instrumentation every time. It's great.
Different instrumentation, different genre of music, that form follows function there.
Yeah.
Excellent. All right, folks, you have a great weekend. On Monday, we'll be talking to the one and only Digby. Yes, you'll be saying Digby now. Digby said. What is it? Digby said. Digby, what is that? I can't remember. All right, folks, see you Monday.
Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light's shining bright. I guess I'm where the choice was made, for the option where you don't get paid, for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive between the 101 and the 5. Do you know how far the detour takes you? Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my